CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, lovely people of Earth. How are you? Wow, Leanne, the sun's really just hit your face.
Like in the last 2 seconds?
In a second. Like we were getting ready for the show a moment ago, and then, you know, now you need sunglasses. What the hell happened there? You got a window right in front of you, or has the sun moved to just irritate you? What's going on there?
It's reflecting off of the house across the road.
It's reflecting off the house across the road.
Yeah, it's a double story, and it's reflecting off of the top window.
Have they got one of those parabolic sun mirrors that they use to power up the whole neighborhood? Looks like it. Wow.
Basically, they're trying to set this part of my head alight.
Yeah, I can see.
With a magnifying glass.
It's like when you burnt ants when you were a kid.
Oh, just speak for yourself.
Well, I did. Yeah. I mean, didn't you used to burn ants with a magnifying glass when you were a kid?
No, yeah. But I'd squash them when I saw them when I was in the bath. I'd squash them and then smell them, and they stank.
Well, why are you less cruel than me then? I mean, burning them with a magnifying glass is not necessarily worse than drowning them or squashing them in the bath.
Squashing them is more instant, I think.
Oh, really?
Than burning them.
You don't think that the burning them is like, they don't know what the hell's going on. Suddenly, it's hot. It's over.
Yeah, but you might like burn their thorax and not their head.
I can't believe we're having this conversation first thing on a Monday morning. Oh, what a horrible thing. So Bulelo's back. He did some serious exercise over the weekend. And he did this race. Where did you come? Like 100 and something. But you did,
what, yeah.
Like how many hours?
Loser.
17 hours.
Seven.
Yeah, I'm a loser. I tell you what, I'm older. 17 hours.
17?
Yeah.
Do you stop in the middle?
No, you keep going for, I mean, it's 100K, so you stop about every 10Ks is like a water table.
Oh, my God.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Jesus,
it's,
man.
It's tough stuff, and it was cold there. Yes.
It was cold.
It was raining. And
it was cold this weekend in Joburg, too. I mean, Friday night was chilly. I felt like we were back in winter almost. It was horrible. Horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible. It was horrible. Not great. How was your weekend?
If you were looking for any praise from our side, you've come to the wrong place.
What, for running?
But well done.
100 kilometers.
I've seen now anything to do with difficult. You shouldn't come here for compliments, you know?
No.
So,
no, but it's
I was amongst my people. It's enough.
It's really impressive, though. I mean, you know, I could never ever do that, and I do appreciate that there are people in the world who can, and they're few and far between. I mean, there's a couple of hundred of you who actually put yourselves through things like that, and I mean, it must be an incredible sense of achievement when you finished. But you said you're feeling old because, you know, you can't do it anymore like you used to.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It was my first mountain run in 4 years. So maybe I should have done maybe a couple of 40Ks, 50Ks, you know, get back into it. Last time I did this race, I did it 4 hours faster. So it was like I was a different animal back then. Plus, jeez. I'd done like 100 milers, 250K races, you know. Whew. So this was the hardest race for me I've ever done because it's the most pain I've ever felt. Now I know what people at the back feel like.
Mm.
Like, for me to take 17 hours to do this was like, oh, geez, like,
yeah,
I should be like between 13 and 15 at most. But yeah, it was awesome.
I can tell your energy is a bit like low today. I'm not surprised.
Tracy says it was a gruesome race.
All good.
How about that Courtney who came 8th overall? Crazy race. A good friend of mine finished 97th overall and second woman's vet. I'm in awe of anyone who's run that. I mean, yes, absolutely. What was the winning time, says Moonchild? Do you know?
9 hours 47 was the winning time. Yeah, American guy, Jim Walmsley, he's the Tiger Woods of mountain running. He's insane.
The Tiger Woods of mountain running, and none of us have heard of him except you.
Yeah.
Shame, it's such a specialized
field. How do you fuel yourself?
Well, you got to carry your stuff with you. So you're always carrying like bars and protein bars and a little bit of food. And then every 10Ks, you got food. I mean, you train before this as well. This isn't Sally who feels like she needs to start a yoga class and wakes up and goes on a whim for discovery points.
Do you?
You know, you train for like 4 or 5 months.
Do you feel like absolute shit after you've done 17 hours?
No.
What do you feel like?
You train.
So you ran this on what? Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Like, where exactly was it? Because then you came back on, obviously, I'm assuming. Oh, so you flew back Saturday?
No, I flew back last night.
And
so,
how did you move? Because your legs must have been sore. Your body must have been tired. How do you move around the airport? And that airport in Cape Town, they make you walk. You're like, oh God, here's another 17 hours. Just try and get from the parking to the plane.
Shattered. Like, I'll tell you, my legs are even now just absolutely shattered. My quads are completely done. So I don't mind walking upstairs, but walking downstairs right now. Oh,
I'm sure.
Like giving birth out of my quads. That's what it feels like.
Wow.
But an awesome feeling. I mean, it did remind me it's my favorite thing in the world to do. So we'll roll out a few more early next year. For sure. 100 Ks, 100 milers. Let's get back into it.
Cabello says, what the fuck, Mbulelo? You want to kill yourself? Congratulations. So the president was on last night, and he made a lot of sense. I mean, I can't really fault him. Like, he was quite sensible.
What?
Yeah, I have no problem with anything he said. He's like, you know,
are you okay? Did you also run the race?
No, man. And let me explain. So he was basically, he's being the only adult in the room. All these countries that have prevented us, suddenly put us on a red list, prevented us from traveling. It's a knee-jerk reaction. And I was expecting our government to do the same. And like, oh God, no, we're going to impose more lockdowns and shit. And he didn't. He was sensible about it. Thank God.
You know? Even the WHO has said these countries are being premature in putting up these bans. Bless you.
Well, Cyril was sensible. Sneezing. I mean, he didn't.
You're on mute, Gareth. Yes.
No, I can't be on mute. Am I still on mute?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
You're fine now. You were.
No. So this has turned into one of those work meetings.
He made absolute sense. Like, he was adult and reasonable. And he's like, we're not imposing more restrictions on people. We're not going to suddenly stop you from doing X, Y, and Z. No interprovincial travel bans and all that shit. He's like, we're just going to carry on. We've got these things in place. Get vaccinated if you're not vaccinated. But we're not going to put a mandate in now. If they do put in a mandate, they're going to be people who complain. And again, I don't understand how the unvaccinated pose a risk to the rest of us. I don't get. But we're not going to go down that road. Not this morning. I don't have the energy. And the fact that he admonished those countries that have put us on a red list is also good. He's like, hey, hang on, guys. Mm-hmm. We made an arrangement. We said we would not unfairly prejudice countries where these strains are discovered. We discovered it. Didn't mean we came up with it. We were the ones who foisted it on the world. It's already in most of these countries anyway. So I don't know why we should be punished for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway.
And we're now feeling what it's like to have the stigma attached to us.
Yeah.
The South Africa virus.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As much as they try and call it something else, we are being pointed at.
No. Gareth was not on mute. Don't project, Leanne, says Carl. Thank you.
I can't see that comment. It's only coming up on your side.
Oh, really? Well, look, I mean, he could.
Awesome.
Stink Mina's saying, give him 2 weeks. All those things he said are going to change. I hope not, because we've seen very little in the way of giving countries that locked down any kind of advantage over countries that didn't. This is fairly obvious now. So to go backwards here would be such a waste of time and such a stupid backwards step. Anyway, Kirtan wants to know, morning, want to know what the alcohol limit when driving is. I got stopped last night at 10:30 and I had one drink. I just witnessed one guy pay a JMPD officer 1,400 rand, who was so drunk and allowed him back. I think you now can't even have one glass of wine or beer. I think that puts you over the limit now. Because, you know, they keep bringing the limit down. They think that, well, if we make it less and less, it's going to make people drive less drunk. doesn't, to drunk drivers, they don't care whether they had one or seven, you know. So I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Our
psychology is so broken to that.
Yeah, don't even try.
In South Africa.
Yeah. Mole, you look like a funky Star Wars character with a shade on your face. Okay.
I know. At one point, it looked like a Maori tattoo, and I was like, oh, cultural misappropriation.
Oh, yeah. You would have been in trouble. Transformers, the Age of Omicron. And it's called Omicron, so people are already coming up with nicknames for this strain. They're saying it's the Cron. So it's also like coronavirus. So have you got the Cron? That's what people are saying to each other now. It's great.
Sandita, so they missed out on two. There was one two-letter word that they were going to use. And then the one after that that they also skipped out on was XI or Xi. And that's because it's a popular name in China, obviously.
Oh, well, I don't know why we're protecting China's. Why are we protecting China's feelings? There is a country that does deserve the blame for coming up with coronavirus. We shouldn't be looking after them. You know, well, we'll, because President Xi's name is XI. We should have gone with the Xi version. I mean, for fuck's sake, they didn't have a problem calling it the South African version back in December last year, the Delta.
They could have called it Van Skalkwyk for all we care.
Yeah, exactly. Bloody hell. Just because it's Xi, we don't upset the Chinese. Why do the Chinese get treated with kid gloves when they're the ones who foisted this on us, if you don't mind? In Australia, you're allowed to drink and drive. They call you a traveler. It's not illegal as long as you're not over the limit. Well, I mean, the limit's probably
it's
tiny.
It's called a traveler.
Yeah. Sandile says 0.05 grams per 100 mil. I don't know what that is. Anyway, I mean, you didn't get arrested, right, Kirtan? So it is a Monday morning. There's lots to get into this morning. If you want to, Bulelo's going to give us a little preview of what's coming up on Cliff Central Sport today. And we're also going to just sort out what the precise rules are that we're going to have now for traveling, because there are different rules that come into play. And I really hope, I was thinking last night of all these families who are, you know, who had plans for Christmas with their friends and family, and now they're not going to be able to join them because of these new restrictions. My sister-in-law's sister is out here from the Middle East somewhere, and she can't get back now. So she's going to have to make, you know, alternative arrangements. I met some other people at a memorial service who said to me they came out from England for this, and now they can't go back. So they're going to have to spend a couple of weeks here until all of this has changed. Now, imagine, you know, December's on our doorstep. This week is the 1st of December. And you suddenly find yourself stuck in a country or stuck on your own somewhere else. I mean, fine if you're stuck in the same country as the people you're visiting and you're happy to be there and they've got place for you to stay and all the rest of it. But you imagine how this adds to people's costs. And then if you do go back to a place like the UK, you have to quarantine yourself in a hotel at your expense for like £3,000 or £4,000. You know?
Imagine you've left your kids behind or they're traveling with you and now they can't do school and stuff. Oh, what?
Oh, yeah. So this is not great. This is not good for anybody. And I just think it's so awkward and unfair for these people. This is the time of year you make plans. You try to have something organized in the diary for Christmas and New Year and it's family time and all that stuff. So I think there are going to be a lot of very, very unhappy people. So we got to talk about that.
But how long are we going to have to hear about this? Like, this is the world now.
No, at some
stage, grown-ups go, like, okay, this is the world now.
No.
We can't continue to have a whinge every Christmas. It's three Christmases in a row now. And I know it's like, it's awful, but part of being a grown-up is life can be awful, isn't it?
So you have to make changes in your own life, right?
Yeah.
That's what you got to do.
Adjust.
Yeah.
The world is as it is, not how you want it to be.
Well, that's why I think I'm putting any plans I had for next year and international travel on hold, because I can see that this isn't going away anytime soon. And even though I had all kinds of ambitions, I was busy planning a whole lot of stuff that I was going to do next year, and it was getting exciting, and I was about this close to booking flights and things. And I just decided, nope, this is not going to happen. Hold on a little bit. So let's just see. And
it's called managing your own expectations.
Yeah, and if that means that I've got to spend another year in South Africa, it's not the end of the world. You know, I'll make it work for me. There's got to be a reason for this. There's something that we all have to get out of this. And I know it's very irritating and it's extremely frustrating. And for some people, it's the worst thing that could happen to them. But I'm not going to let this get me down. I'm going to just carry on. I've got things to do. I'm going to get into
it. Very positive this morning, Gareth.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, I am feeling positive. You know, I looked at even this weather that we've had, all this rain that we've had recently, and it's not really the summer that we were promised, right, yet. I mean, it'll be warm again this week, apparently, and looks like it's going to improve. But what are you going to do? You're going to rage against the machine and rage against the weather? What's the point? There's nothing worse than someone who just moans the whole time, and we're not going to be those people. So let's get on with it. I do like the way that
the guy we spoke to.
Yes.
The guy we spoke to on Friday. What was his name?
Oh, Marco. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I showed that video to my mom, and she cried. She was just so in awe.
Yeah.
And that just links back to the whole thing of, stop complaining. Your life isn't that bad.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please stop complaining.
Right.
Oh my God. The amount of complaining that got like these people. Jesus. Why'd you take off work? I had a cold. Like, crikey. Do me a favor. Oh my God. The complaining. I actually can't stand it. I've got to be honest with you. I mean, Gareth, I think I've been working here long enough now. It's like, if there's one thing I try not to do is to complain about the circumstance.
Yeah.
Just get on with it. What is wrong with people?
Also, other people aren't going to, they're going to give you lip service and pretend that they're listening to you while you're moaning. But really, they don't want to hear that either. Is there anything worse than hearing
Is
there anything worse than hearing someone else moan about their lives? And even if you're a really empathetic person and you really do care and you feel deeply for other people, even then, it's got to be exhausting for you. Because ultimately, these other people just just drains you. I'm going to read some books this December. I'm going to read some books this December. I'm going to get fit. I'm going to spend my time.
What's that, December?
Exactly. Doing things December. I enjoy.
You're either a liability or an asset to people, right? Like if you're whinging the whole time, you're just a liability in everyone's lives. And no good. Nobody needs that. Especially in these times. Like life's hard enough now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's that time of year where people are kind of overwork and they're ready for a break and they want to be around positive and optimistic people. And my God, I find it extremely difficult to even on WhatsApp or on the phone to be talking to people who are just downers. And there are so many people who's just their entire life is about fear, about being pessimistic, being nervous. Things are hard, moaning, whinging, being afraid of the world. And I'm like, no, you guys are missing out on all the good stuff. There's so much good stuff. Like being alive is actually great. Of course, it's challenging sometimes, but it's great. Would you rather never have been alive like that Professor David Benatar says? You know, the guy at UCT, he's a philosopher. I interviewed him not so long ago. And he says, no, it's better to have never existed. To foist this life on people is just a punishment that they don't deserve. And I'm like, why? Why would you say that? I think it's you take the good with the bad. Of course, you're going to have to deal with, you know, death and difficulty and tragedy. And some people's lives really are full to the brim of tragedy. And I understand if they're a bit more, depressed than the rest of us. But the good, those highs of those, when you stand outside and you look at a beautiful view, or you look up at the sky and you realize how far and wide and vast this earth is and how you're just this tiny little piece of it and it's not about you. It's the best feeling.
It's like taking mushrooms.
Well, yeah.
I guess in a sense. So to your point of feeling useless, so part of mountain running, part of the pleasure of it is that, you know?
Yeah.
Like mountains are massive. And, you know, you can choose to whinge. Mountain just doesn't care. It'll still be there. You can climb it or not. Don't worry about it. nobody cares, pal. You gave up and you quit. And that is an awesome analogy. But on the whinging thing, I had two great sort of lunches while I was in Cape Town.
Whinging.
And yeah, jeez. One person is like on the executive panel of some of the most elite events in this country, health and lifestyle, so running and cycling and stuff. And then the other guy was in charge of, so not the malaria pills we have now, but the last strain of malaria pills we had. He was in charge of sort of the research and drive on that project.
Oh, yeah?
And it was just so awesome to listen to people talk practically about the future, like geared up for it. It was amazing to what you've been saying this morning. Mm.
I just don't understand how we haven't defeated like malaria yet, because malaria has been around a shitload of time. I mean, it's been there since time immemorial, right? People are being stung in the swamps.
We're actually quite close with malaria.
I hope so.
I saw something recently. I think people's expectations have changed now that we've been able to develop a COVID vaccine so quickly, relatively quickly. So I did see something quite recently about malaria. The other thing is cancer, but the thing is there's so many different varieties and forms that it's a tough one.
Patrick says it's easier said.
And science is really young.
Patrick says, to the point about like people who are having a tough time and their life is really hard. Patrick says it's easier said than done for people suffering from depression and mental illness. It's pretty insensitive to say that to those sufferers. Well, I mean, insensitivity is my middle name. So what do you want me to do?
No, I mean, obviously there are cases which are different. We're talking generally.
Yeah, there are genuine victims in life, but we mustn't make the anomaly the rule.
G-Man,
with all due respect.
G-Man says you need to get a life. You lot, that's us. We need to get a life and show some compassion for people that are struggling. Knocking them is not helping them. I'm sorry. I don't have a whole lot of energy for that. I really don't. It's up to the people in their lives to give them all that compassion. This is not the place you come to for that. I'm sorry. You know what?
If you're looking for a representative of somebody who's battling, then that's me. And even I can say, in general, we should all be looking up at the sky and looking for the rainbows and the positivity.
Look, I get that there are people suffering, but I don't think that you're suffering any worse than all the generations of humans that have come before you. There's no way that you're having as tough a time as they are. You're not living, surviving from day to day, just trying to fill your stomach, find some shelter. You know, those basic things. In other words, that life is not as hard for the average human being today as it's been for any other human being, even just yesterday. It's getting easier and better to be human. And many people are looking for a purpose or a meaning in their life, but many other people are also looking for a reason to complain and to feel sorry for themselves. And they like this because this is what gets you attention in the modern world. If you go online and you complain about how difficult your life is, you get a whole bunch of people saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you. It's so hard to be you." And I'm not that person. You can find it everywhere. There's lots of it. You watch television shows where people are commiserating with each other. You hear these groups of people who get together and then like they sit in a circle and they all support each other. That's not what this show is. There's plenty of those things. Go and find it with them. It's not going to happen here. So to all those people who are complaining that we're not compassionate enough, find it. Find it somewhere else. It's not here. G-Man says, you are the media. You spread the fear to start with. Not us. There's been no fear here. Not from the beginning of coronavirus have I said this is a fearful place. And I'm not going to be afraid, and I haven't been. I got over this thing end of March last year. So don't say we added fear. Now knocking those who are struggling because the fear-mongering is inconsiderate. The media started the fear, and now you knock it. Yes, we didn't start the fire. Sorry, not here.
But the birds
burn. Somebody sent me those lyrics yesterday, ironically. Oh, it's so great. Yeah.
Oh.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Mitchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studer, Baker Television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. Anyway, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It's great.
I remember hooking up with someone's girlfriend at the dude's house to that song. That's whenever I hear that song.
That is low.
That's great.
And he walked in, and he, yeah, that was, it was pretty awkward at his own birthday. Very awkward.
Sis Mbulelo.
That's great.
I was like 15, Leanne. What do you want to do? Yeah. What do you want me to do? But also, again, I didn't start the fire.
Also, to the winner, to the winner go the spoils. You know, life is a competition. I hate to say this to people when we're already being lambasted for being not necessarily as compassionate as we should be. But life is hard, and it's also fun, and it's also a competition. And to the victor go the spoils. So for those people who are going to sit and mope all the time, you're just going to get left behind. And there's no space for that. Get up, do things. You can make choices today that will make your life much, much better. Or you can sit there and wallow in your own misery.
Thank you. I wish that where were you when I was 15 and this guy came in and I was making out with his girlfriend? He needed to hear what you're saying now.
Yeah, he just said, you know?
And then he kicked me out of his
lost.
Life.
You lost. Mbulelo is more attractive to her than you are. He made the move, or she made the move on him. You are the weakest link. Cheers. Sorry.
Homebreaker.
You know?
No, he was 15. It was a nice house, but then he kicked me out. Very awkward. No Uber back then. It took forever for me to get picked up. But,
so, Patrick just wants to clarify something because he was the one who started this whole we're not compassionate thing. He says, believe me, it came out incorrect per se. I don't think those sufferers should impose what they're going through on positive people. I agree. Victim mentality is shit. I just feel for those suffering. Well, good. Then we need people like you to be compassionate because God knows, you know, that some of us are not as good at that as you are. Again, competition. Like in the competition of being emotional and empathetic and kind and caring, Patrick would win. Mbulelo and I are at the back of the queue when it comes to that stuff. And thank goodness we're not all the same. Thank goodness that there are people who are compassionate and who are gentle and genuine and caring and thoughtful and listen and all that stuff. And then there are people who don't. There are people who do the other stuff. We need both. We need everybody. Natalie says, my worst is people who moan for years and refuse to change. If you don't want to do anything to be better and to do better, you don't get to complain. No, you always get to complain. You can complain as much as you want, just don't expect everyone to listen. So again, I'm not telling you to change your behavior. I don't mind that at all. Just don't impose your misery on people and then expect that they will keep on taking it, even if they're family or friends. You know, you see so many relationships where one of the partners in the relationship is very needy and they keep kind of forcing the other person to bear some of their burden. And maybe they have a really, you know, they have a difficult life. Maybe it is a mental illness or a chemical condition. Thank God we've got Dr. Hanan on today. But eventually that partner just goes, okay, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. And then they have to get out of the relationship. And then that person who was hoping for the other one to shoulder some of their burden now has nothing to lean on. Because they've leaned so hard on that person that that person decided to get out of the way. And then the whole thing crumbles. You don't want that, you know. In any relationship, you can't have that. Even a friendship. If there's a friend who's always like, you know, they need constant affirmation and they've got insecurities. And eventually the rest of the people in that friendship circle are going to go, oof, let's not invite that person this week because I think they're a bit heavy, and I think they're, you know, they're making it difficult to have fun, because that does happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not do amateur psychology when we've got a professional joining us later. And we will, by the way, on the Dr. Hanan thing, we're going to talk to somebody who has an issue. And this is really interesting. It's Sarah. She's got a tricky family relationship, and she'll tell us about that because the holidays are coming, and you know you're going to be you're going to be foisted with relatives that you don't necessarily like, or ones that you don't mind, but they don't make the Christmas table fun. So, go on, yeah. Bolelo.
No, go ahead, Leanne. No, Leanne was saying.
I'm sorry, you know, at this age, when you get thrown off track, you've got to really think hard to get back on. people, we forget that in America, people live in completely different areas to where they grew up, and they're all going home for the holidays.
Yeah.
And I've seen a bit of a trend on TikTok,
yeah,
where they're showing their parents the new tattoos that they've got over the last year.
Yeah.
And the parents just reacting and going, what have you done to yourself? What is this? Yeah. Why have you got a cloud? What is this?
Yeah.
I can't believe you've done this to yourself. You've changed so much.
Uh-huh.
What happened? And to that parent's point, what happens if your parents, let's say you live in South Africa, they live in the UK. What happens if they came to visit 2 weeks ago?
Oof.
And now, let's say you don't like the parent, and now they're stuck in your house. Imagine your mother-in-law now is stuck at your house now.
Ugh. The worst. All right, so quick overview of some headlines, just so you know what's going on. So South Africa is going to remain on level one, and the government is mulling the idea of mandatory vaccines as the fourth wave looms. So we're just going to have to wait and see what happens there. But Australia's reopening plans, they are going to review their plans to reopen borders to skilled migrants and students from December the 1st. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said that on Monday after the country reported the first cases of Omicron. Oh, but I thought you guys with your lockdown, you wouldn't ever get sick. Mm-hmm. How did that happen, Australia? The Japanese government plans to effectively close borders to all foreigners from this month. An official announcement will be made as early as Monday afternoon. That's the Japanese. And a lot of people are saying, including our president, that the international community have acted precipitously. He warned that restricting South African travelers is not informed by science, nor will it be effective in preventing the spread of the Omicron coronavirus variant. Now, apparently, according to our own Medical Sciences Research Council, this Omicron variant is not necessarily more dangerous. It seems to have only mild flu symptoms, and it seems the effect of this is not nearly as bad as people had predicted for a new strain. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
The person who said that, Dr. Angelique Kutsia, is the South African doctor who first spotted this new COVID variant. And she says, extremely mild symptoms, but more time is needed before we know the seriousness of this disease for vulnerable people. So there we are. That's the latest we have on that. And that's more than enough, if you ask me, about coronavirus for this morning. Gun-free South Africa has called on youngsters to have their say on gun control. I don't know how this gun-free South Africa exists. I don't know who supports them. I don't know who's paying for them to exist. I don't know why they're around. But South Africans, according to them, especially youngsters affected by gun violence, are being called on to have their say in the control of firearms. Yeah, because people who live in gang neighborhoods and who are affected by gun violence, of course, all of those people are having this done to them by legal gun owners. You know, obviously. So all we need to do is make more rules. That's what Gun Free South Africa says. Except that it isn't legal gun owners that are the bad people here. These people who are perpetrating gun violence are people who have illegal firearms. And they're already not complying with the law. So Gun Free South Africa, what more laws do you want to bring in to control people who are already not listening to the laws that exist? You dummies. Anyway, anti-gun lobbyists have been given another chance to engage with stakeholders around a proposed bill that will see personal gun ownership come to an end. You can get utterly fucked if you think that legal gun owners in South Africa are going to suddenly comply with some draconian law that forces them to give up the only bit of personal protection they still have. Because when the police can't be trusted, which we know is the case, and when the police don't pitch up when you need them, guess what? You've only got your own gun to rely on. And if these morons at Gun Free South Africa think that the rest of us are just going to allow violence and theft and stupidity to reign, then they haven't read the tea leaves properly. So good luck to them. Anyway, Gun Free Director for South Africa, Adele Kirsten, said this is an opportunity for those directly affected by guns to make their voices heard. Gun Free South Africa is standing alongside other organizations such as Child Safe, UCT's Children's Institute. You see, they always use, that's what these people do who don't have guns, is they use children as their human shields. I know that sounds outrageous, but that's exactly what's happening. It's always these children's organizations. They hold the children up in front of the guns and they say, we need these children to be protected. But who's going to protect the children? Who, you, without your gun? When some child molester is walking through the neighborhood, what would you like to do?
My biggest issue, like, whatever, you know, we probably sit on opposite ends of the gun spectrum thing, but I'm not even worried about the gun thing here. What society that is functional has ever listened to the children to make decisions this important?
But then
this is crazy.
The point is, it's not.
This is crazy.
They're not listening to the children. They're using the children as a reason to get their political. You know, these kids, and most kids are not growing up with gun violence in their lives. The ones that are growing up in neighborhoods that are so out of control that the only way to bring them back into control is to let the people in those neighborhoods who are good people have guns to protect themselves. Sorry. Anyway, I mean, it's just, this is dumb. And if I were you, I would do everything I could in my life to not listen to anyone who says they're from gun-free South Africa. Be like wasting your time talking to a fish underwater. Oh, this woman in Australia has set fire to a quarantine hotel, and she's been charged.
What?
Yeah. She's like
a 31-year-old woman.
That's a bit dramatic.
Relax. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. She's been
calm the fuck down, Margaret.
She's been charged with arson after a fire destroyed part of a COVID-19 quarantine hotel in Cairns, in Queensland. It's alleged she lit a fire under the bed in a room she'd been sharing with her two children on Sunday morning. More than 160 people.
That's so clever.
Yeah, I know. Well, you can imagine how... you want to see how shit this hotel is, by the way?
Well, she did start the fire. You know, song she could never play.
Let me show you a picture of this. I would have set fire to this hotel myself. See how ugly it is.
No good.
Oh, it's the worst. Now, I don't know how long you have to spend in these quarantine hotels in... Australia, but let me show you what it looks like, and you tell me if you wouldn't have set fire to this place. Imagine 2 weeks you have to sit in there with your two kids driving you crazy. Probably really shitty substandard room service. Look at this place.
Oh, well, that's the burnt bit, right?
Yeah, that's the burnt bit.
It wasn't great to begin with.
No. It looks like absolute shit. But anyway, I mean, what a horrible place to have to be. For 2 weeks or whatever the time period is that they put you in there. And she's now being charged with arson, and it's not going well for her, poor woman. But, you know, again, don't...
She just made her problems worse.
I know. Don't set fire to things. This is not good. Anyway.
Great starting point.
Yeah.
Great starting point.
Don't set fire to things. It's usually quite a good way of making your life a little bit better, not worse. All right.
Yeah.
Those are all the headlines you need to know about. But South Africa has also, you know, you've got Miss South Africa. And apparently our Miss SA is preparing for the Miss Universe pageant. And she has vowed to shed light on women's issues. Okay. I thought you were just going to look pretty.
Well, let's remember that she's going without South Africa's support because of the Israel thing.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. Yeah. This is what people are...
But is she a graduate of any sort? Like, why do I need to hear from her about women's issues?
No, you don't.
Has she thought it through?
No, she's good looking. Okay. She's good looking, looks good in clothes.
That is tricky for me. Once a woman's good looking, it is really tricky. I will listen to her say anything she's not qualified to say.
Yes, that's my point of view as well. All right, so it's going to be okay with Dr. Hanan, is what we do on a Monday. If you have a particular problem in your life that you would like to deal with, then you may do that by sending us an email. Send it to contact@cliffcentral.com. Here is Dr. Hanan, who is joining us this morning. He's got another... When do you actually close down over December? Do you get a break?
Yeah, I'm closing down on the 17th. I'm going away on the 21st if interprovincial travel is allowed.
Yeah, I think that should be fine. But it must be annoying for you because... You might even... Do you have some kind of a rule with your patients that they're not allowed to call you while you're on holiday?
I'm one of those therapists that I do make myself available. Oh. They can call me anytime, and people do respect those. People respect natural, you know, compassionate and appropriate boundaries, so it kind of works out. It's okay.
Thank God. If they don't appreciate those boundaries, you have to cut them loose. See, that's what we were talking about this morning. All right, so Dr. Hanan, it's this time of year when people are getting together for the holidays, but it's not always festive, and there are often clashes between family members. It's something that's come up in our discussions before. So today we're joined by Sarah, and that's not her real name, but we're going to ask her to explain her story. I'm also going to keep her anonymous so her camera's off. But Sarah, you've got You've got a tricky family situation, and you want to ask Dr. Hanan how you're going to deal with this. So I'm going to put Sarah on. There's no picture, but we can hear her. So Sarah, go ahead and tell us what the story is with you and your family situation.
Thank you. Morning, everybody. Morning. In light of what you spoke about this morning, this really is not meant to come across as a victim issue or woe is me, but more about what is the best way to handle a frosty stepmother who came into our lives 18 years ago, pretty much the day my mother died, and has managed to impose her incredibly toxic, abusive, revolting, tricky personality onto both my sister, myself, even my father.
Sure.
Family, friends, and her children. We managed to see her and my father probably once a year. Don't live in the same city that we do.
Yeah.
My sister also lives abroad and doesn't want to come back to South Africa to see her or my father. At the moment, everybody is in the same town for a family wedding. So Captain Frosty is here. My sister is here. We'll see what happens with her having to stay here or being able to fly out. And I think the real trick is she's here for a week. Mm-hmm. We have to see her with my father.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be back with my father over Christmas. And it's the first time that our families are spending Christmas together in over 10 years.
Wow.
So how do we handle her and without getting triggered by her really petty, pretty much passive aggressive nature?
She sounds horrible. Sorry, Dr. Hanan, I need a little bit of a description here. So she sounds like a really horrible person. Is she outward? You say passive aggressive, but does she make everybody around her unhappy? I mean, what's the motivator here? Does she like being in control? What's the story? I just need to understand.
It's such a weird thing because, I mean, before she came into our family setup, we had quite a happy family.
Hmm.
I mean, we could rip each other off. Nobody took things seriously. Nobody sweated the small stuff. Everybody's personality was accepted. It was a really good situation. And now we have to walk on eggshells. I don't understand why my father is with her. I'm obviously missing something.
Mm.
It's either that or I'm starting to wonder if he's into abuse.
Mm.
But so to answer your question, she has managed to sever relationships that my father and my mother had for years.
Mm.
She's unable to have relationships at this stage with one of her daughters. And that's recently ended, and with my sister and I.
Sure.
My father often says, look at what she's done. Isn't this lovely what she's done? Have you thanked her? Which obviously is not something we really want to do. So I don't understand how she gets away with so much power and how she has this ability to almost make you feel quite nervous about stepping out of line and actually just saying to her, who the hell do you think you are? I think because after that.
Why do you have to walk on eggshells around her? What's the reason? Have you ever tried speaking up? What had happened when you did?
Yeah, so there's been a few times. I think every single time I've been in her presence for more than 3 days, it's been incredibly testy and there's been very heated exchanges. And that's not really who I am and who my family are. But about four or six years ago, my husband and I arrived on Christmas Day to see my father, and she was there. And we got an incredibly icy welcome. She left as soon as we arrived to go visit a neighbor, looked down on us. And I went for a walk with my husband and said, I think we need to leave. And he said, cool, I'm happy. Let's do what you need to do, but I'm not staying in this house. I went back to the house. I said to my dad, I wanted to speak to him. I asked him, this is probably the 10th time that I've asked him to please stand up for me when she speaks to me like that. And why doesn't he stand up for me? And he just goes mute. And we got in the car and left, and he was shock, horror, why have you done that? She turned around and told me how selfish I was for doing that. And I said, maybe she should look at herself, because she's pretty much the selfish person. And we never spoke for whatever, 4 or 6 years after that. We still don't speak. I'll tolerate her. So that's kind of what happens. When we do speak up, it becomes incredibly testy. She has a mood swing. My father goes mute and goes into her defense.
So if your dad was, if your dad was in this conversation with us, and I asked him, so what do you feel about her? I mean, he's been with her for 18 years. He would say she is what?
I ask myself that all the time.
You obviously,
maybe she made some good food.
She certainly adds value to his world, right? I mean, that's why he's with her, because if she didn't add value, whatever that is, he wouldn't be with her. Tell me, what's your relationship like with your dad?
So there wasn't much of a relationship growing up. He just worked all the time. When my mom died, I think he realized that he had to start having relationships with us. I'm quite open, so I would start sharing lots of stuff with him. He just goes mute. So the relationship now is he calls a lot. We don't see each other that much, maybe once a year, as I said earlier. I love him, and I feel really sad for him. So I think the way that I approach him is I'm always trying to make sure that he's happy, or, checking in with him, is everything going all right? But he just keeps referring or deferring back to kind of being on her page, and I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but it's almost as though the conversations that come from him have got her thinking behind it, which is just so strange and just so not my father.
And how long are they coming down for now?
So they'll be down for a week now, and then in 3 weeks' time, they'll be back for Christmas.
And how long is that for?
Another week.
So look, this is what I think. First of all, as I said now, she obviously adds some value to your dad's world. As a sum total, there's plus for him. She does something. Whether he needs somebody, maybe since the loss of your mom, and I'm just assuming maybe he needed somebody to control the situation, he needed somebody to pilot his world, and she seems to be a controlling person, and he seems to hold on to that. You know, that's what a lot of time happens when somebody goes through turmoil. They don't lean on weaknesses, they overcompensate, and they lean on overly strong, overly controlling, overly demanding, people that put you in line. And if we had to have the opposite for him, and I've seen this a lot, at least in my practice, if, for example, your dad listened to you and he said, you know what, I'm going to let go of this because I can do better. A lot of the times, Sarah, a lot of the times they actually fall apart because they need that stability in their life. Now, I'm not saying she's in the long run healthy for him, but in the short run, you know, it's like a drug addict. You know, if a drug addict is 85 years old and they've been smoking, let's just say 20 cigarettes a day, and it's unhealthy for them, if we tell them to quit now, they actually get worse. So sometimes we kind of say it's the lesser of the two evils. Mm-hmm. But what I would say for you is, you know, sometimes life puts you in a position where you have a choice between good and good. In other words, whatever you choose, you're going to gain. And sometimes life puts you in an even easier position where you have a choice between good and bad. And the contrast is so stark that it's just an easy decision to choose where you would win, where you would gain. But sometimes life puts you in a position where you have a choice between lose and lose, terrible and disgusting, horrible and despicable. And you have to choose, you have to make a choice where you would not win, but rather lose less. And in this case, obviously you love your dad. Obviously you want the best for him. And you see in the long run, perhaps this is not ideal for him. But the choice that you have is speak up, set boundaries, and there's conflict, or don't speak up and don't set boundaries. And obviously you feel that sense of despair for your dad. So either way, you're going to lose. There's a cost to it. My suggestion to you is pick a God to serve. Pick a God to serve. Because you can't serve, you know, I want what's best for my dad, and at the same time, I want what's best for me. You can't, because that means you're going to be sitting in limbo. You're going to sit on the fence. Hmm. My advice to you, and this is very, very superficial based on our 7 minute conversation now, mm-hmm. is to accept if you value your relationship with your dad, then at least he's coming for a week and another week. It's 2 weeks in total. Let him leave knowing that there's peace with his children. Let him leave knowing that that you don't necessarily support what he's doing, but at least there's no conflict and he doesn't feel that you're against what he's doing. So if I were you, I would just kind of grin and bear it for the next 2 weeks and at least just service the God, of making sure that your dad's decision, or just following or supporting your dad's decision, smiling and or grinning through it. So I wouldn't fight. I wouldn't set boundaries. I wouldn't argue. I wouldn't conflict. I would just act as though you want your dad to be, I'm assuming you do, you want your dad to be happy in the next 2 weeks. It's just 2 weeks cost.
Yeah.
It's a little cost to gain benefit in the long run.
Grin and bear it, in other words.
Grin and bear it.
I think that's pretty much been the way I've been operating for 18 years. But what starts to happen is that you just start sucking up and keeping quiet when quite rude statements get made or snide remarks get made. And I think that at a point you just carry on accepting that. I suppose it becomes quite tough to figure out what is the best of the two evils.
So you know what? What you have to accept is two things. Number one, that there is a cost to whatever you're going to choose. There's no perfect solution. Yeah. Perfect solution is your dad making perhaps a better decision for himself and the whole family in the long run. But it is what it is. This is what's going on, and we have to work around it.
I just want to know. Can I just ask what kind of things does she say to you? I mean, how horrible is she?
I see your daughter doesn't know how to pack a dishwasher.
Kind of shit.
Whoa! What?
Yeah.
You know what? Like these nasty remarks, I see it so often. You know, guys, it's like kind of underhanded remarks that take a dig. They just are so finely tuned to take a dig.
What a bitch!
But Sarah, I want to tell you that there's obviously the fact that your dad is not making a move. There's a cost. And the cost, or the fact that your dad's not setting boundaries, there's a cost. And the cost is to your relationship with him. He's gone to bed knowing that by him not standing up to his wife, it affects his relationship with his daughters. So what I would say to you is create natural distance. You don't have to be nasty. You don't have to be horrible. You don't have to engage in conflict, but create natural distance, which you naturally have. You see your dad once a year. Between you and your dad, and the relationship is healthier, but it's much more superficial. That's the cost. But what I want you to accept is that there's no perfect solution. You are marrying a God, you're serving a God, but obviously the other gods that you wish you could have served is actually not being fulfilled, and that's okay.
Well, somebody says here, Carl says, shame, Sarah is the only person who is disappointed that the president didn't ban interprovincial travel. And then there's a very, this, I know this isn't, we're trying to be sensible here, and thank you, Dr. Hanan, but Corona's Boring says, I've got a friend who had a grandmother like that. His uncle pushed her down the stairs. I thought it was a bit cruel until I met her. Justified. He should have used a lift shaft.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
No, I love that. I mean, my sister's conversation to me, I think the last time they spoke, which was probably 11 years ago. She said to my sister, I know I'm not your mother. I know I'm not. And my sister went, intelligent. And she said, I was going to say well-read.
Oh.
And my sister said, no, I think intelligent is the word you're looking for.
Oh, wow. This is going to be fun. Kind of,
yeah, you can actually have fun with it if you think about it. Entertain yourself.
Pretend. So in other words, what Dr. Hanan is saying, like, pretend you are some kind of intermediary between – you know, like the various powers in World War One. Go back to World War One, and you have to make it. you have to stop the war from breaking out. That's pretty much your job over these 2 weeks that you're going to be around them. Just stop the war from breaking out.
I'm just saying, don't put pressure on yourself to find a perfect solution to this Rubik's Cube that where there isn't a perfect solution. There's a cost to whatever you position you take. And if I were you, I would smile, grin, and bear it. I would try make your dad leave thinking, even though it's a completely false thinking, oh, my God, things are peaceful. Then you've won the battle. And then obviously the cost is to create that natural distance between you and your dad, but that's a natural cost.
Well, our audience have lots of other solutions. Robin says poison. Poison is the only solution.
I 100% agree.
Oh, no.
Sadly, says Tracy, there are no winners here. Yeah, I'm afraid that's about
absolutely
right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's quite right.
Doc, you're not always going to be able to find a perfect way out of things. And sometimes it is too complicated. So you just have to choose the path of least resistance or the path of least damage.
And I suppose that's quite right.
I suppose this is the advice for today. So there are lots of people saying, oh, but come on, Dr. Hanan, it sounds like you're just putting up with this stuff and you shouldn't have to put up with it. But I think, you know, we don't know all the details, but from what Sarah's saying, this woman is a terrible, terrible thunder bitch. And you just don't want to, you don't want to pile on pressure on your poor dad. He's probably, you know,
absolutely.
He probably feels it. And frankly, I mean, you know, let him at least spend the majority of his time with her, not having to worry about the conflict.
That's the key. That's the key. You know, like, you don't want to be a cowboy here. Like, of course, it would be a lot more entertaining for me to come on and say, just tell you to get your dad to get divorced and, you know, push right back against her. Yeah. And all the audience will go, yeah, you go, you know, Dr. Hanan.
Yeah, sure.
But the truth is, I don't believe it. Sometimes, as I said, life is a bit too complicated to find a perfect solution to everything. And there's a cost to this, and that's the cost. So at least satisfy and make sure that your dad leaves feeling a little bit of peace in his heart, especially since you have a good relationship with him. That's what I think.
But maybe, I mean, Sarah, that just before we let you go, because we've got like a minute left of this, Robin says, make your dad put his money in a trust. That's very important.
I think that's done. That's good.
Okay. Then
excellent.
Someone saying, give her, Gentle Inflatable says, give her a laxative in her spaghetti sauce as revenge. That could be fun.
Of course, ideas.
Don't let it. Yeah, these are good ideas, but of course, these do not come with Dr. Hanan's stamp of approval.
Yeah,
I would try to have.
Like, you've got me thinking now. How legal is it to spike someone's food with stuff?
Mary says, "I would try to have fun with this." She thinks I cannot unpack a dishwasher. Well, let me show you how. I can't even take the dishes to the kitchen. I would be such a slob and annoy her to no end. Wow. Okay. Well, lots of good and not such good reactions. Spike the punch.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll have a personality when she's drunk. Does she improve when she's drunk? No. Is that something that she does?
Pardon? Does she
improve when she's drunk?
No, no, no. And she's not small.
Oh, so
she's large.
Oh,
and she's large. Not a small woman, you know.
So she's a big, nasty person. Okay.
Yeah. A drunk man's words are a sober man's thoughts. So alcohol never makes anyone better. Yeah. If she's like the sober.
Wow. Anyway.
These messages are not backed up by my personal endorsements. Let's just put it out there.
Yeah, thank
Definitely
you.
Definitely not.
Thank you, Dr. Hanan. Just distance yourself from these comments. I agree. All right. Thanks so much, Sarah. I'm sorry. I hope Christmas is bearable for you. And, you know, there are going to be those moments where you can look at your husband and laugh about what she's just said and kind of just smile at each other in the kitchen while she carries on
Absolutely.
In a cycle of misery.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody. Dr. Right. Hanan, we'll see you next week. Good stuff, Sarah. Thank you.
See you then. Bye, guys.
All right. Cheers. Wow. Phew, sounds horrible. Huh?
Yeah. Yo, that is awful. The term there's a philosophical thing. It's called a Cornelial dilemma. It's when, like Dr. Hanan was saying, that it's when both choices are detrimental. Because if she says something to her dad, oh, you don't love me now. Hmm. She doesn't say anything now. She has to now be told how to pack a dishwasher in her own house. God. Imagine. Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, she sounds truly
sounds like
awful.
These. I'm,
you know, there are some people who just.
Sounds like these. I'm so grateful I'm single.
You almost want to meet this. I want to meet this woman. I love, like, actually getting into the presence of someone who is just completely bad or completely good. Because most of us have both sides, right? We're all kind of a mix of characteristics. Absolutely. But if you can meet someone who's just thoroughly awful, and you know straight away that they're just a terrible person you don't want to spend any time with, I do find those people interesting. I find them fascinating to be around because they are so absolutely black or white. There's no gray in between, you know. So great. Anyway, I'm sorry, Sarah. Good luck to you. It's not great for you, but I'd love to meet this woman. Just see how awful she is. She sounds truly, truly revolting. Okay.
Thunder bitch.
Thunder bitch. All right. It is Monday. It is just after 7 o'clock. It's almost the end of November. CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com.